WCNC Charlotte. This is Flashpoint.
Thanks for joining us for what is a special edition of Flashpoint. I'm Ben Thompson. Charlotte is still grieving the four officers who were shot and killed Monday trying to serve a warrant in an East Charlotte home. On Friday, hundreds showing up in Uptown to pay their final respects to CMPD officer Joshua Iyer. He's one of four heroes who were shot and killed Monday. Correction officers Samuel Pelosi, Alden Elliott, and Deputy Marshal Thomas Weeks also died. It's part of an alarming trend across the country. Data from Officer Down Memorial Page shows the number of officers who've died in the line of duty up nearly 22% this year. And there are ongoing efforts to help some of these families. Joining us now is Lindsay Lacazzi. She's the CEO of Back the Blue North Carolina. Lindsay, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
I don't have to tell you this. This has been a tough week for the folks of Charlotte, these families, the people of the Carolinas. Give us some indication. What are these families, and by family, I say both their immediate family and also their extended family, that are their members of their departments. What are they going through right now?
Shock and grief would be my best guess, of course. I mean, this is the biggest massacre I have seen on law enforcement officers, I want to say, since the attack in Dallas, Texas, 8 years ago. I mean, it's just absolutely shocking. The damage that was done, how many officers were injured, how many officers were killed in this situation.
And how is your organization stepping in to help them?
So our organization, Back the Blue NC, is a 501c3 nonprofit that is dedicated to assisting the children and the families of officers killed in the line of duty here in North Carolina. So when we lose an officer, we immediately jump into action to fundraise for these families. Now, in this case, typically we're used to just dealing with one or two families at a time. But in this case, we have four families that have been affected by a line of duty death.
Data shows officers are dying in the line of duty in an increasing manner in the last year. What needs to happen, do you think, to help protect these officers who are protecting us?
Well, in this situation, I know that they were serving an arrest warrant on a felon in possession of a firearm in order to remove the firearms from him as well. So we need to be able to increase the removal of firearms from the street and from felons who are not able to be in possession of them. Unfortunately, this is exactly what the U.S. Marshals Task Force was intending to do when the suspect opened fire upon them, resulting in this mass casualty incident.
I feel like when we talk about this problem, you know, people say, oh, well, they need to be arrested more. And then police will say, well, we can only do so much. And then the district attorney says, oh, well, I'm not equipped to do this. It's too much, too many cases for me to handle. Where do you see, as a person who sees this on the front lines, where's the rubber meet the road? What needs to change?
I would say our judicial system definitely needs a change. So I'm a former law enforcement officer and a detective. And as a detective or an officer investigating a case and charging a person and serving a warrant, not only are you facing those dangers, but you are doing the best that you can to complete your investigation and to charge these individuals and make sure that they are convicted in the court of law. However, we see that a lot of these offenders are not receiving proper sentences for their offenses, and a lot of them are being released. So there, like you said, there is really so much that law enforcement can do. It is what happens when it goes to the DA and the justice system. So we need to see stricter penalties for these sorts of individuals, especially dangerous felons and possession of firearms.
So then would you say it goes back on lawmakers to come up with some of these stricter policies?
I would say so. I mean, in my experience, that is what I have seen. Also running the nonprofit, I've seen that as well. A lot of offenders, I feel, are not receiving proper sentences for their crimes. They're being released on probation or bond. And then that just allows them to reoffend and become a danger to the public and to law enforcement officials.
Do you feel like you started your group back in 2020? Do you feel like the climate towards law enforcement has changed in that time? You went from folks calling for defunding the police to I think you don't hear those calls quite as much as you do as you did a few years ago. Do you feel like we've found some sort of middle ground here?
That's tough to say. I mean, we were founded in the midst of the defund the police movement just to show our support for law enforcement officers and to show our appreciation as a community because morale was so low. And like you said, we don't hear the defund the police message as much anymore, but the danger against our law enforcement officers has continued to increase. And we are seeing an increase in these violent crimes and deaths occurring with our officers.
And finally, if people want to help out, what can they do?
So right now we have a GoFundMe established for the families that were killed in Monday's tragedy in Charlotte. And that could be found on our website, which is backthebluenc.org. If you cannot donate, please share. If you can, attend the memorial set up by the departments. I know CMPD has a memorial set up right now in honor of Officer Ayers, who was killed. And then there's also a memorial set up by the U.S. Marshal's Office in downtown Raleigh, their headquarters.
Lindsay, thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your time.
Still to come on Flashpoint, East Charlotte still reeling after terror struck their neighborhood this week. Next, how that community is looking to heal. Welcome back to Flashpoint. East Charlotte at the center of this tragedy this week after our officers were shot and killed while trying to serve a warrant. And now a nonprofit is working to heal a community often forgotten. Joining us now, Greg Asciutto with Charlotte East. It's a nonprofit working to revitalize the city's east side, doing important work. Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Rightfully so. We talked a lot about the families involved in this, of the officers and the department itself. But Monday's events had a profound impact on East Charlotte as well.
Sure, absolutely. And like you mentioned, the grief is palpable for the officers, for their family, and for the rest of the force. It's truly a dark cloud right now. I think most of us are still very in shock. You know, while there are isolated incidents of violent crime throughout our community, I think what we saw on Monday, that does not reflect our community values. That is not who we are. And for individuals, particularly who are coming to protect our community and to serve it, the grief is heavy.
For people without historical context, East Charlotte's been working hard,
sure.
And been working hard for years, and had limited success and has taken three steps forward and sometimes four steps back and sometimes four steps forward and three steps back. What does something like this mean?
You know, it's hard to contextualize this in the sense of a setback while there is still so much palpable grief, right? It's going to take significant time for the dust to settle and for our community to see anything other than what this is a tragedy, right? But in terms of you look at the historical context of the underinvestment and the way that economic development has unfolded in our city for particularly the past 10 years and where the money, both from the private and public sector, has been directed, sure. I mean, it's been tough. It's been a continuous climb. But I will say, you know, where we are at right now, after speaking with about, you know, 15 to 20 nonprofit and community leaders over the past few days, we are going to be very intentional about ending the reactiveness in terms of what it comes to with violent crime, particularly in the pockets that there have been higher incidents of, which is where the event occurred the other day around Milton, Barrington. And, you know, we had yesterday, we had three other gun-related incidents on the east side, right? And I will say that things definitely did calm down for quite some time. You know, we've historically had issues with crime since the late 90s, particularly. I mean, that was part of the reason that Eastland went the way that it did.
Yeah.
It became an unsafe environment. And really think the incidents of crime have picked up since mid-2023, right? Yeah. So we're at this position now, even looking at a citywide lens, but particularly with the east side, we know summer is coming, right? Like, and it's unfortunate because I don't think there's a lot of optimism in short-term improvements to the situations that we're having. But I do have significant confidence and optimism with the individuals who are doing phenomenal work in our community, violence mitigation, youth support. We are going to create a long-term strategic plan, particularly isolated for our geography. We know what we need best. We are active on the ground. And I do have faith that this group really, we can make things happen.
You've seen parts of East Charlotte that have had remarkable success and are thriving in a variety of different ways.
Sure.
Talk to me about the struggles of this neighborhood,
sure,
though.
Sure. So particularly, you know, our focus area with Charlotte East is east of Eastway to W.T. Harris, bounded by the Plaza and Independence on the south. Its development has been very, very slow. And, you know, economic development is not a silver bullet. And I do separate workforce development and trainings from economic development in terms of jobs, in terms of our folks being able to live and work in their communities and still have a high quality of life. We just simply don't have that. And there are myriad factors for why that is the way that it is. You know, we're very saturated with social services right now. You know, we have the LB Scarborough Center for support from the county. The county has also purchased land close to where the incident occurred the other day for another community resource center. We have the Umbrella Center coming in off Albemarle Road for domestic violence support. So my point in saying this all, we've gotten to the point in our community where the need is so dire for social services, but we're not accompanying it with jobs that can lift our folks living in East Charlotte out of their situations in terms of socioeconomic standings.
You mentioned earlier Eastland.
Sure.
I feel like you can't talk about you know, East Charlotte without talking about Eastland. It's been an ongoing issue for more than a decade now. Do you have more optimism when it comes to for people who might not be aware, Eastland is the epicenter of East Charlotte.
It's our center city.
It is, and it sat empty for years and years and years after tons of failed promises. So it does impact everything else we're talking about here. Are you feeling more optimistic about it now?
It's a good question. It's been 6 months since council really voted to merge the two parties together that were competing for the 30 acres that are going to be really the economic activator, right? In terms of a combination of a sports, indoor amateur sports complex, which should bring significant tourism dollars, which is what we've needed. We've needed an influx of cash from outside of our community to invest in our folks, right? Create jobs. In addition to Charlotte Soccer Academy and Southern Entertainment working on the Albemarle and Central slice right there, kind of where those next to the streets, to develop a project as part of that 30 acres. But to answer your question, it's been 6 months since we've gotten an update from city staff that's been direct about here are our next steps. Here's the timeline.
Greg Asciutto, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Give
our best to the folks of East Charlotte.
Thank you.
Up next on Flashpoint, CMPD Chief Johnny Jennings, one-on-one with WC. Welcome back to Flashpoint. It has now been 6 days since the deadly ambush at an East Charlotte home, and the community continues to process the loss of four officers killed in the line of duty. CMPD officer Joshua Iyer was one of those heroes. WCNC Charlotte's Vanessa Rufus sat down with Police Chief Johnny Jennings to talk about Iyer and how his department is investigating Monday's tragic events.
You said something in one of the most recent press briefings that was pretty troubling to hear as far as what was found inside the home, semi-automatic weapon, I believe it was a 40 caliber firearm, as well as more than 100 rounds of ammunition magazines. That's troubling to hear. And where might he have gotten that?
That's a good question. That's going to be part of the investigation, that at the end of the day, we will determine where that weapon came from, or both of those weapons came from, and then we will determine how it fell into the hands of a convicted felon. And so that's very concerning to us, but it's not unusual. We have a lot of people who are convicted felons that still have access to weapons, and getting access to a weapon is not difficult in this country. With per capita, we're the highest rating, highest per capita guns to human ratio in the entire world. And so when you start looking at situations like that or circumstances like that, then the accessibility to these firearms is not very difficult. You have kids that are able to get guns with no issues at all.
There was a question about why the task force might have chose that time of day to go to that home and serve that warrant versus maybe going at night. What can you speak to as far as that goes?
Well, I mean, there is no good time. Why not? I mean, the U.S. Marshals task forces across the country serve thousands of warrants every single year. CMPD serves a great deal of warrants every single year. When you have a task force that is going out to serve warrants, there's a method to why they serve the warrants when they do too. They do intelligence work to see where that individual might be and when might that individual be there. I'm not privy to what that intel was on this case, but it could very well be that they said, hey, this time of the day, this is when he's usually at that house, and this is an opportune time to go and arrest that individual. Or they could have gotten information at the time when they've been looking for him and say, he's here right now. And that could have led to them going there. So, you know, I'm not going to ever Monday morning quarterback this. There's nothing to Monday morning quarterback. All the other warrants that we serve throughout the year, it doesn't result in this, right? So most of the time, people come peacefully and you knock on the door and you find whoever you're looking for there, and there's no issues, no concerns. So something like this in my 32-year career, I've never seen anything like this. So there's no reason to second guess the actions of the officers. I think they did everything appropriately. And the things that I've seen at this point, you know, I commend them for even going out to say, we need to get this person off the streets because he's a felon and he's in possession of a firearm. So we're going to take actions to take him off the streets.
As a leader of this department, what keeps you up at night most about this situation?
About this situation, or just keeps me up at night?
In general.
This has always been the thing that keeps me up at night, the safety of our people who are out doing this job. And I know that they are put in some very difficult situations. They have to be all things to all people a lot of times. And, you know, they're scrutinized to no end, so they have to be held at a higher standard as well. And I don't know how many other professions wear a body-worn camera their entire shift except to go to the bathroom. Everything that they looked at is that they do, and everything that they say is monitored and on camera. That's something that is the demands on what they have to do is at a higher level than in most professions, if not all professions. So I want to make sure that they're okay. And when I go to bed at night, and when I wake up in the middle of the night, and I think that my first thoughts is that we remain safe and that we keep our community safe.
And you can watch the full interview with CMPD Chief Johnny Jennings on our stream platform, WCNC Plus. We're back after this. Welcome back to Flashpoint. We continue to honor and remember the four officers who died in the line of duty this week. The tragedy bringing up unsettling memories for so many law enforcement families. The last time officers were shot and killed in Charlotte was back in 2007, when officers Jeff Shelton and Sean Clark were gunned down in the parking lot of the Timber Ridge Apartments, only about a mile from Monday's incident. Before that, it was back in 1993, when officers John Burnett and Andy Nobles were shot and killed in West Charlotte. WCNC Charlotte's Sarah French sat down with the sister of Officer Burnett about how decades later she is continuing her brother's legacy.
But you never get through it. You never get through it.
It's been 30 years since Kim Dellinger's brother, CMPD officer John Burnett, was killed in the line of duty.
And he decided he wanted to try to be a police officer because he wanted to help people.
Officer Burnett and Officer Andy Nobles were two of the first community policing officers in the city. They were killed in October of 1993 chasing a car theft suspect. Both officers were shot and killed.
And the news clipping came through. I knew in my gut. I knew that was my brother.
They were the first two CMPD officers shot and killed at the same time in the line of duty. Sadly, they wouldn't be the last. Kim says she's been watching the coverage of the recent four officers shot and killed in East Charlotte.
What was that like for you when you saw the news of the officers?
For one, it brings back the trauma of what we went through, but mostly I feel for the families.
What would you like to say to the families since you've been in their shoes?
They've been on my heart and in my prayers. Y'all have a long road ahead of you, but you will make it.
Kim says one thing has sustained her through it all.
God, I pray. It's hard because you have to think of how they lost their life. Yes, they were protecting and serving us. You know, they were doing a good thing. Oh yeah, I think about him every day, every day. Because I have 3 children, I have 7 grandsons, and every one of them know the story about John. They know about the police officers. We've kept his memory alive.
For WCNC Charlotte, I'm Sarah French.
And folks, you can come interact with us on social media. Express your thoughts, what you think about this topic. We know it's something we're going to be talking about in the weeks and months to come as our city grapples with this. And of course, you can always listen to our podcast. And we'll see you back here next weekend.